The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com. And distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to the Audio Stash. Today it is Friday, July the 6th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org to get involved today. It won't happen without you, so make sure you join. We have an absolutely huge, jam-packed audio stash for you today. First up, it's PBS travel host, author, and Normal Advisory Board member Rick Steves with an exclusive interview with us today. Rick, a very passionate American seeking an end to marijuana prohibition here. Great insight, a wonderful guest, and that's coming up for you here in just a minute. We have links to Rick's website, ricksteves.com, at normalaudiostash.com today. Also on the program, part two of our interview with the group Potluck. We're giving away five Potluck CDs today along with a Potluck t-shirt. Everyone gets a free Normal Freedom card with every CD and t-shirt as well. More about how to win those free CDs later in the program today. Or check out the website, normalaudiostash.com. We'll also have our Celeb Stoner update with Steve Bloom. We'll talk about Al Gore III. He had quite an Independence Day of his own this week, as many of you know. We'll find out more about that and his dad's escapades with marijuana in the past from Steve Bloom at CelebStoner.com. All here on the Audio Stash today. Let's get right into our stash with our Rick Steves interview. Joining us on the audio stash today is Normal's Globetrotting Advisory Board member, Rick Steves. Rick has produced his public television series, Rick Steves Europe, has hundreds of episodes airing on public television and cable television throughout the world. He's also the author of over 12 travel guides. He's a syndicated columnist for the Tribune Media Services and writes an op-ed piece for USA Today. Rick's podcasts are also some of the most popular online. We have links to Rick's website and to his podcasts on iTunes on our website today at normalaudiostash.com. Rick is passionate about ending marijuana prohibition here in America, and his unique perspective traveling to Europe so frequently is a valuable addition to our discussion about legalization here in the States. We caught up with Rick by phone last week on one of his rare summer visits home. Rick, welcome back here to the Audio Stash today.
Thanks, Chris. Good to be with you.
It's wonderful to have you back here on the program, Rick. I know we're catching you in between European trips this week, and things there in the EU have evolved even further, especially in the Netherlands, where some coffee shops in towns that are on the border with Germany have sort of accepted the increased foreign traffic, and some Dutch politicians have even been calling for continent-wide marijuana law reform so that less people have to travel to the Netherlands just to visit the coffee shops.
Yeah, I just gave a talk to the ACLU about the drug war and smart drug policy and comparing how different nations deal with this issue. And, you know, in Europe, they recognize they've got a drug problem, and it's generally heroin and health and crime related to hard drugs. And, you know, cannabis is barely mentioned as a serious part of their drug policy. When it is, it's called problem cannabis use. And it's just like problem alcohol use, or, you know, there's a lot of different things that you can do and have social problems or health problems because of them. And they certainly look at these problems as a health issue rather than a criminal issue. And in Europe, I think they are interested in measuring the success of their drug policy by harm reduction, not by how many people you can lock up and so on. So they're focusing on the harm reduction aspect of it. Now, again, they're not just a lot of people think of the Netherlands as, oh, they just, you know, they're all smoking pot over there. Actually, statistically, the Dutch don't smoke more pot than other countries in Europe, and they don't smoke more pot per capita than Americans do. They just have a famous policy of tolerance because they're pragmatic about it, and they feel like if some people want to smoke recreationally, as long as they don't have a problem lifestyle because of that that hurts other people or costs the government extra money, they're going to let it go. And they've had a 10-year track record with that, and it works really well. Law enforcement types in the Netherlands are they're not soft on drugs. They're smart on drugs. And, you know, I think that's an interesting issue in America. You know, the question is, are you hard on drugs? And if you ask a politician, you know, are you going to be hard on drugs or are you going to be smart on drugs, they'll talk it over with their consultants and say they're going to be hard on drugs because that's what goes over with the American electorate that's afraid of this. The Netherlands is much more pragmatic, and they've got a track record now where even the people who want to be hard on drugs realize the smart and pragmatic approach is to, you know, think of marijuana like alcohol or tobacco, and if people want to do that on their own, it's okay.
And so often here in the U.S., Rick, we hear politicians hide behind this mantra of that message, you know, what message to send to children about marijuana. But Dutch kids and Dutch teens actually have lower rates of marijuana use than in other EU countries.
You know, the whole notion in Europe is that if you make things illegal, then illegal people are selling it on the streets, which makes it much more expensive. It brings in crime, and it also has these unscrupulous characters that see big money in big sales, and their logical, from their point of view, market to target is kids. The Dutch see their policy about marijuana as providing a firewall between young people getting caught up in harder drugs. And this is a very interesting concept that's a little bit beyond the attention span of the average American voter. The idea that if you have marijuana available to people who want to smoke it recreationally in coffee shops, this enables the police to communicate with the part of the community that's likely to take drugs and explain to them the dangers of the harder drugs and what chemical problems are out there lately and so on. It takes the incentive from unscrupulous street dealers away, and the consequence, as you mentioned, Chris, is that use does not go up among young people. And, you know, I don't think it goes down, but it doesn't go up like people are afraid of, and you take the crime out of it, and you're able to deal with the health consequences of what they would call problem cannabis use, and of course you're able to cut back on the popularity of harder drugs in your society.
And Rick, you spend so much time on your travels in Europe with regular families, just regular folks who live there. And it's certainly not like the Netherlands everywhere in Europe, especially most notably in the UK and Ireland, where there's been a lot of reefer madness rhetoric lately. There's a real mixed bag for marijuana in Britain right now.
Well, you know, I've observed this over the last many years because I just see the huge success the Dutch have had and the obvious beauty of not having 80,000 people in jail like we do here in the United States for marijuana charges, you know. And that's just laughable is not quite the right word. It's inconceivable from a European point of view that you would lock up potentially hard-working, tax-paying, decent citizens, parents, you know, employees, whatever. In Europe, they're famous for having zero tolerance for driving and drinking and this sort of thing. You know, they're tackling the problem, which is drug abuse and reckless behavior that can be associated with drug use, recreational drug use. All over Europe, I guess what I'm getting at is with the success the Dutch have had, I'm surprised there's not sort of a snowballing effect around Europe where everybody would embrace the Dutch program. but there's not. And part of that is because there's right-wing groups and there's Christian groups that are really pushing the reefer madness approach and the fear approach about drug policy. And you've got this, I think, really frustrating insistence on the part of the United States that we're going to come down hard economically on people that don't agree with us on drug policy. I've got friends in Denmark that say they're nervous a little bit about the marijuana because they say every year we have to arrest a couple of people on marijuana charges in order to maintain favored trade status with the United States. So you have that injected into this whole thing, and you know, I think for a reason a lot of countries decided to follow us into Iraq. They just figured it would be less costly for them not to buck American policy if we're hell-bent on a certain thing. I mean, we really have a huge impact on people in a lot of ways behind the scenes, and there's a lot of arm-twisting going on. I know my friends in Switzerland who run head shops, what do you call it, paraphernalia shops, you know, in the spring, the ambience is clamping down. It's not so easy in Switzerland anymore. You're not going to get your stuff here. And then in the fall, it's very easy going. And they tell me in the spring we have to put on a front of, you know, hard on drugs so we don't develop a reputation as being soft on drugs, because that is something that will cause them more problems than what they want to deal with. But that's a pragmatic approach to the external sort of factors there that they have to employ. I've got friends in Spain, which is smokes quite a bit of pot, and you know, they, as parents, they don't want their kids surrounded by a bunch of people smoking pot. Once the kids are paddled up to bed, you know, the recreational, the casual, social marijuana comes out, and it's quite a routine thing in Spain among, you know, hardworking parents and professionals that just want to relax with a joint after hours.
And Spain is exceptionally child-friendly and has much more of a cohesive involvement of children into all kinds of activities, I hear.
Oh, well, in Europe, the kids are out on the streets, and it's just the neighborhoods are there, and everybody looks out for every... It's, I mean, I don't want to romanticize it, but the population density is higher, and they've been around longer. And, you know, in the United States, if we have a... In my little town here in Washington State, if we have an Oktoberfest... Great, there's going to be beer in our little town, and there's police at the gate of the tent keeping dogs and children out, you know, because you can't have kids watching people drinking beer in public, and you can't have dog hairs in your food. You know, that's so American, and it's so un-European. So I spend a third of my adult life in Europe, and I find it quite relaxing to get over there and find where people can embrace this notion that's so popular in Europe that you've got to make a choice as a society. You can choose to tolerate alternative lifestyles, or you can choose to build more prisons. It scares me to think that the United States prisons are being privatized, so there's going to be a profit motive to have more people in jail, and that's just one more huge lie that we can embrace as a society, that we care about people, and then we have people making money when you lock people up.
And Rick, as you point out, we live in a time where civil liberties in America are under attack, or even have already unfortunately been superseded by government. Do you think marijuana prohibition has jeopardized our viewpoint of civil liberties in this country overall?
You know, when I think about the American war on drugs, and when I think about the American war on terrorism, I just, it saddens me that we militarize every struggle we've got. And, you know, I think our society has spent, somebody from LEAP, Law Enforcement Officers Against Prohibition, told me that before drugs were even called illegal, 1.3% of our, we had 1.3% of our society addicted to drugs. This is hard drugs, this is not marijuana. And then in, 1970 or whenever Nixon declared the war on drugs, we had 1.3% of our society addicted to hard drugs. And now, 30-some years later, and $1 trillion later, and so many, hundreds of thousands of lives messed up because of locking them up in jail, we still have that same persistent figure, 1.3% of our society really messed up because of addiction to hard drugs. I mean, it's in Europe, they realize, hey, you know, you got 98.7% of the people that don't have this problem. Let's deal this with a little more compassion and a little more understanding and a little more honesty. In the United States, maybe we don't have the attention span there's too much fear politics or whatever, but we tend to be conned a lot easier. I mean, the stuff that is said here without any serious discussion would blow a European away. I mean, they can't believe the stuff that our news reports and that our politicians will parrot and so on, that people here, just in the land of the free and the home of the brave, they're neither free nor brave about it. They just accept it because they're afraid to speak out. One reason why I'm so outspoken on marijuana is because it's embarrassing to live in a free society where, you know, a third of the people in this country have smoked it and they're not criminals, to call it a criminal offense. And it's just one of, you know, it's just one lie too many that people are embracing. And I happen to have a job where I can speak out, and it doesn't threaten my livelihood and so on. And I just wish more people would realize that it's not dangerous to speak out. I mean, I go all over the country talking about this. I'm on TV talking about it. I refer to it one of my little goals is to talk about marijuana in every one of my guidebooks. And sometimes it's hard to be in Ireland and talk about marijuana. But I just want to desensitize people to the whole notion of casual, responsible adult use of marijuana. If more people talked about it and if more politicians realized it wasn't political suicide to deal more thoughtfully with drug policy, think of it in terms of harm reduction instead of vote maximizing, they would find that conservative people, they would find that hard-minded, pragmatic people would support a smarter, more European approach to drug problems. But as long as we're shrill and as long as we distill everything down to bumper sticker, you know, sound bites, it's going to be tough to get beyond that. But I had a chance to talk at length about this societal affairs discussions or whatever on TV in Seattle. The station was all nervous that we were talking about this so straightforward. And we got a mountain of feedback, and everybody across the board, conservatives and liberals, thought what a refreshing thing to have a thoughtful discussion about this persistent issue. You know, who knows when we're going to realize that that there's a better way to deal with a persistent problem of drug abuse and drug misuse than declaring war on something that can't be beaten this way. So it's an important issue, and I'm just really glad that more and more people are talking about it. And I guess the bottom line was, it wasn't political suicide to talk about it. If more politicians knew that, they might be bold enough to actually question the sanity and the effectiveness of our misguided war on drugs. But I still think the average politician thinks that they can be swift-boated when they raise their voice on this, and then the simple tag will be, this guy is soft on drugs. I think he should preempt that and say, I'm not hard on drugs, I'm smart on drugs. I think that makes a lot of sense.
You know, some politicians have come out very strongly supporting medical marijuana, and this legislative season we've seen a few governors strongly against it as well. But in some ways, does medical marijuana make the perfect issue for politicians to hide behind instead of talking about much-needed broader reform?
To me, it's kind of a cop-out. I think there's pragmatic reasons that people do that. But I've, you know, as a board member at Normal, I always weigh in on just the notion that I'm here not because I think cancer people should be able to have marijuana to relieve their symptoms. I mean, obviously they should be able to, but that's not why I'm here. I'm here because I'm not a criminal. I'm here because I'm a good citizen. I smoke pot, and it's one of my civil liberties. You see, I feel very strongly about that. And this year, 800,000 people were locked up, 90% of them on marijuana charges, 90% of them on simple possession. And I don't want to spend billions of dollars a year locking up people like me and my friends for responsible adult use of marijuana. It's flat out misguided. It's stupid. It redirects precious resources in law enforcement away from serious problems. It erodes the credibility of teachers and parents and police, and it's a fiasco. And I'm just surprised that there's not more people with a little celebrity who are courageous enough to say this. Because it's just a truth. It's so, to me, it's so clear, it's so logical, it's so reasoned. I'm not saying smoke pot. I'm not saying children should be able to smoke pot. I'm not saying smoke pot and drive. I'm saying stop arresting mature adults who want to enjoy a little recreational use of marijuana here in a land where it says, the whole thing is enjoy life and freedom in our country and live well. What's the phrase in the Constitution?
Life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness.
Yeah, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I mean, hello, what more patriotic thing can you do but to, you know, stand up and raise your voice for what should be a civil liberty? You know, it's high time that people got together and raised their voices. It'll take a little courage. It'll take a little doing. But, I mean, I can think back to the days in the early 1930s when it must have been very courageous people that stood up and questioned prohibition, because nobody wants to be publicly in favor of booze. But you can be in favor of having a policy that doesn't lock people up for drinking. And treats alcohol smartly, like we do now in our society, where it's not sold to kids, it's taxed, it's regulated. You can't drive with alcohol, and so on. They just knew pragmatically that you're not gonna wish it away. You know, Nancy Reagan can say just say no, but you know it doesn't work that way. And Europe knows that, Canada knows that, and most of America knows that. I wish the politicians would wake up and realize that. There's a chorus out there that's getting louder and louder.
We're with Normal Advisory Board member, PBS travel host, author, columnist, podcaster, Rick Steves. Rick, I interviewed poet John Sinclair earlier this year. He lives in Amsterdam now, actually, and he mentioned something very interesting, that the EU has come together recently to form this group of countries. Yet that same group of countries fought some of the bloodiest wars in human history. Now they're coexisting, they've got a common currency, common interests. Have you seen a change in your travels there in Europe since the full implementation of the EU?
Yeah, you know, I hear a lot of Americans saying, oh, the French are surrender monkeys, you know, because they won't follow us into a needless war. And those people don't have much of a sense of history. I mean, France, in the memory of some people that are still alive, fought a war in which half of all the men in their country between 16 and 30 years of age were casualties. I mean, that is really an amazing amazing hit on a society. In many days, the French, who have one quarter of our population, in a single day lost more than we lost in the entire Vietnam War. Then it would happen again next Wednesday. Here in America, you know, we're traumatized if a couple dozen people are shot down in our streets, or if a helicopter goes down in Iraq and we lose a handful of soldiers. Tragic as that is, we don't know what real losses are in the magnitude that Europeans have experienced. Consequently, they take war a little more seriously. Mm. I'm haunted by the thought that many Americans profit from war. To me, I know that when a bomb drops, buildings are destroyed, people are killed, and Americans are making money. When they say a bomb cost, $40,000 or $60,000 or $10,000, whatever, you know, a missile cost or something, I mean, it doesn't cost that. It was sold for that. It probably cost a quarter of that, and somebody's making a lot of money, and they're Americans that are making that money. You ask them, do you want a smart, quick solution to this war? They might say they do, but their financial interest says, no, let's let it drag on. That's a scary thought, and it's not a thought that many people want to bring up. But if a war cost $1 billion, well, I mean, it costs hundreds of billions of dollars, people are making big money. And also, people's lives are being ruined, and innocent people are being killed.
And is that contributing to the problem here in the U.S.? Perhaps why the DEA and the ONDCP hold on to these reefer madness lies to protect a profit?
Well, yeah, the whole prohibition against hemp goes as proponents of cannabis know, goes back to how hemp would threaten existing corporations. Wasn't it like an alternative to cotton or something like that? I mean, there's always vested interest that clouds people's judgment. And lately, even just as perplexing to me is the political interests of people that support the war on drugs. It's just very scary if you've worked really hard to get into office to say you are anything other than hard on drugs and supporting the war on drugs, because the general American electorate doesn't want anybody in office that's not going to give them three strikes and you're out, throw away the key, you know. Mm. And this kind of zero tolerance business, people in law enforcement, they just have to hold their nose and do it. But they know that it's pretty counterproductive, and people in the media know all of the idiocy of a lot of these policies. I mean, I've been in a lot of interviews lately on TV or radio, and as soon as the camera goes off, everybody goes right on. Man, I'm glad somebody's saying this. But can any of those people even peep any sort of question about DARE programs and the war on drugs? No, they can't do it because they're worried about their job. You got teachers in teachers' lounges and high schools all over the United States embarrassed by the war on drugs, embarrassed by all of the flat-out lies they got to tell their kids so they'd be afraid of drugs. And they can't even talk about it among themselves because if word gets out that they're questioning the war on drugs, it's not good for their job security, that's for sure. I know that for a fact from teacher friends here in the Seattle area.
Well, Rick, this has been a wonderful conversation today, and it's always just so great to have you here on the program. Thank you for being our best American ambassador to Europe. Without your travels there, Americans might look even worse to the EU residents. Rick, thank you for your work, your courage in speaking out about marijuana law reform, and thank you very much for joining us here today.
Well, thanks, Chris. I'm kind of an odd duck. I've spent a third of my adult life in Europe living out of a suitcase, and I come home. And I'm thankful that I live in a country where I can speak out a little bit. And it's great to have an opportunity through your podcast to do just that. And best wishes. Thanks for what you're doing.
Rick Steves is the producer and host of Rick Steves Europe. Hundreds of episodes have been produced, and they air on public broadcasting here in the U.S. and on cable. He's the author of numerous travel books. He's a syndicated columnist with the Tribune Media Services, and he has his own top-ranked podcasts out there. We have links to Rick's website and to his podcast up on our website today at normalaudiostash.com.
You're listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Now it's time to check in with our friend Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com to find out what's going on out there in celebrity stoner land.
I want to be famous. I want to wear minks and satins and pearls.
Steve Bloom has his finger on the pulse of celebrity stoners of the world, finding out which famous folk enjoy a toke. He joins us each Friday here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. You can read all about the celebrity stoner happenings on his website, celebstoner.com. Steve, welcome back to the show today.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Doing very well this Friday, Steve. I'm waving my hemp American flag. And speaking of holidays, it was an extremely interesting 4th of July for the Gore family. Give us a rundown here on the son of our former Vice President Al Gore, who is now facing his own inconvenient truth in regards to prescription drugs, I guess, right now.
Well, Al Gore's youngest son, the third, he's 24 years old, was arrested at 2:15 in the morning on July 4th out in California in Orange County. He was driving his Prius. Way too fast, 100 miles an hour. A Prius shouldn't go faster than about 70 or 80 on I-5 in Orange County, and police pulled him over. They smelled marijuana, and he has admitted that he was smoking marijuana or had smoked either in the car before, you know, he was starting to drive. The police also they found marijuana. They found Vicodin, Valium, Xanax, and Adderall. The sheriff's department said that he didn't have prescriptions for any of the drugs, and he was arrested. He has since, you know, obviously been taken out of jail and been placed into some sort of substance abuse program by his parents. Interestingly, you know, this tomorrow is the Live Earth concert, which is Al Gore's big benefit show to, you know, alert people to the, you know, the problems facing the environment. And, you know, this week, instead of focusing on that, you know, in advance of the concert, which is, you know, a worldwide event, you know, being held in about 8 cities, you know, Al Gore Sr. had to spend time, you know, dealing with his son's problems. Now, obviously, marijuana, I think you and I, you know, would agree is not a problem, but, you know, when you get arrested, you know, marijuana use is not a problem. When you get arrested, it is. And this is not his first time. It's his second arrest. He was arrested for marijuana in 2002. And it's not his, you know, first time he's had any type of driving violations. He's had several reckless driving violations going back to 2000. He's a graduate of Harvard from 2005. He's an associate publisher of a magazine called Good, which is based out in California. And at the time, you know, he was driving his Prius. He was doing the right thing, but he was driving too fast. And, you know, once again, you know, that is the problem for, you know, for most people who get arrested, you know, for marijuana, Oftentimes it's in your vehicle because you're doing something you shouldn't be doing, giving the police a chance to stop you. And, you know, the second they smell marijuana or they have any hint of it in the car, they're going to, you know, they're going to attempt to search you. And that's what they did with him.
You know, most are likely more shocked about the prescription drugs in this case. I am personally most shocked that a Prius can go 100 miles an hour without, like, rocket packs on the back. No one said if that was a downhill run on the highway or not. But this is also the second time Al Gore III has had a run-in over marijuana. And Adderall, which is one of the prescription drugs he was caught with, that's essentially methamphetamine in pill form. Pretty intense stuff.
Well, you know, yeah, pharmaceuticals are very, you know, accessible. And for whatever reason, people have chosen to use them, you know, recreationally. And actually, there was an article following the arrest just a couple of days ago. CNN posted an article saying that, you know, more young people are doing these pharmaceuticals these days than marijuana. You know, marijuana has always been the recreational drug of choice for, you know, most people in general, as far as the legal, you know, drug of choice. And, you know, now all these pharmaceuticals, you know, are sort of, you know, pushing to the top, so to speak, and they're kind of taking over in popularity, which is, you know, sort of disappointing in a sense that that people would want to, you know, Vicodin is, you know, is a painkiller, and it's a very strong painkiller, and it shouldn't be used for recreation. You know, you have a toothache, use Vicodin, but people choose to use it, you know, for whatever their reasons. You know, they think it's, you know, it's somehow a recreational drug, and Valium and Xanax are more for stress and you know, and just you know, for, you know, calming yourself down when you're sort of anxious, and Adderall is for ADD. So yeah, there is an increase in use. And by the way, he was arrested, I believe, in Maryland back in 2002. It was a car after a car violation as well, and he was driving without his headlights on. And what I like to sort of say about Al Gore III is that, you know, what he's doing is, you know, is sort of like father like son. You know, Al Senior, the former vice president, the focus of The Inconvenient Truth, the movie that you know, that won an Academy Award, you know, has admitted to smoking marijuana. I mean, back in 1988, when he was first running for office, or when he was, you know, a senator, and, you know, that was sort of a litmus test back in the days of Dan Quayle and others, you know, who were first being asked the question about their marijuana use. You know, Al Gore had admitted his use, and then, you know, but he very quietly, you know, admitted his use like a lot of politicians have and just sort of let it blow over. But, you know, when he ran for vice president for president in 2000, I wrote an article for High Times back then called Al Gore, The Party Years, and I did some investigating, and Al Gore, you know, didn't just, you know, smoke pot once upon a time. I mean, he did it a lot. He came back from Vietnam. He was a soldier, and he came back in the early 70s. And, you know, like a lot of soldiers, they first experienced marijuana in Vietnam. He came back, you know, with a taste for marijuana, and he had a job with the Tennessean, the newspaper down in Tennessee. And during that time, he and a lot of his comrades on the newspaper, you know, would spend time, you know, smoking pot, you know, socially and drinking. And there was a guy named John Warrenkey who got in touch with me, and he told me the whole story. And, you know, I was led to believe that this guy was not a reliable witness, but it turned out I did get another person who had worked at the Tennessean who was a little more reliable, who was working for the Congressional Quarterly at the time, and he verified, you know, Warnke's claims that his claims that, you know, that they used to party together, and they used to close the shades in Al Gore's house and smoke downstairs in the basement, and, you know, constantly that was a routine, and, you know, Al never admitted to it. And then, you know, years later in the 80s, his sister had cancer, she subsequently died of cancer. And, you know, for a short period of time, Tennessee had this program where the state actually made marijuana available to patients, and she was one of the patients that received marijuana. So Al knew very well about the medical use of marijuana, and as an environmentalist, I'm sure he knows a little bit about the benefits of hemp, how hemp can help the environment, and of course just the recreational use. So Al never really admitted to that, and now, you know, all these years later, you know, his son is more or less doing what Dad did, but getting in trouble for it. You know, Dad never got in trouble for it. Dad never got busted, you know, to my knowledge, like his youngest son. But, you know, so the bud doesn't fall too far from the tree.
And Father Gore is based out there in California, Steve. Current TV, which is Al Gore's cable TV network, that's in San Francisco. So, you know, medical marijuana is pretty prevalent there. You would think that there could be some mention of this from Father Gore.
Well, you'd like, you know, Al Gore to sort of make a turnaround. You know, I know his focus these days certainly is, you know, not marijuana, never has been, and it is, of course, the environment. But, you know, he, you know, maybe, you know, could give it some thought that, you know, that his son doesn't really have a problem when it comes to marijuana, and the problem really is the laws as we know it. So, you know, I don't know if he'll address this at some point, certainly not, in, you know, until he gets, you know, this concert, you know, completed and moves ahead. But, you know, at the very least, address hemp, you know, for its environmental potential. And it would be nice if, you know, Al Gore would sort of get on our side, so to speak, which he never has.
Well, Steve, we only just barely scratched the surface of the headlines this week at Celeb Stoner. I know you've got more info about Paris Hilton, NBA star Sean Williams, more on Senator Norm Coleman's hippie days, and also some baseball stuff up there. Everyone can read about it all at CelebStoner.com. We have links to it on our website today. Steve, many thanks for joining us this Friday afternoon here on The Stash.
Thank you for having me, as always.
Right on. Thanks again, Steve. Steve Bloom has his finger on the pulse of celeb stoners of the world. You can read all about it at CelebStoner.com. He joins us each Friday right here on the Audio Stash. Fire. 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 Another page, another flow, another night, another show, another day, another dollar, another chance we gonna blow. Potluck is on the low, making fans every show. White girls wanna vogue while my niggas saying ho. Cause that is how we do it. Yes, I'm fat and he is Jewish. Only speak about the truest when you listen to our music. And we the biggest smokers, growing some of the dankest colas, rapping about the life of stolas in Humboldt County, California. That was some potluck, and we spoke to them yesterday in part one of our interview. They hail from Humboldt County, California. We played tons of their tracks right here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Potluck is on the Suburban Noise record label with the Cottonmouth Kings and a host of other great musicians, hip-hop artists up there. Today, we're going to give away 5 copies of their CD straight out of Humboldt and a fine Potluck t-shirt. You can check out photos of the giveaway items today up on our website at normalaudiostash.com. 5 lucky listeners today. One person will get a t-shirt and a CD, and 4 people will get Potluck CDs. Everyone will get a Normal Freedom card who gets a CD here on the Audio Stash today. In order to win the CD, you gotta visit our website. Go to normalaudiostash.com or take an email submissions right now. We'll announce the winners and send out the winning notifications on Monday, so you got all weekend long to win these Potluck CDs. Lead members of Potluck, One Ton and Underrated, joined us by phone earlier in the week. These guys are 100% about promoting legalization and also the Humboldt County culture as it exists today. It was great to speak with them. Let's get back into part 2 of our interview with Potluck. We're with hip-hop group Potluck here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash, part 2 of our interview today. You guys have become pretty popular in cyberspace. We use tracks found up at the Independent Online Distribution Alliance. You're on MySpace and the other networking sites. You know, let me ask you, how's the whole digital music revolution been for you guys?
The online craze right now is really good for especially people like our groups like us, and Sub Noise too, just being independent, being able to put your music up there. You know, with the access of everyone worldwide to be able to be on the internet, that's huge for us. So, I mean, as far as MySpace comes, that's one of the biggest places on online right now too to get music. So, I mean, can't complain. I'm happy about it for sure.
And is it you guys, like in person, who are checking the MySpace pages and interacting with the fans up there?
We always check our MySpace pages. We're on the MySpace. Like, you know, we don't have anyone doing our MySpace for us, so. It's cool being able to interact with the fans being at home, actually, when we're not on tour, you know, seeing what's going on with the people and being able to, you know, spread the news of what's going on, you know, what we're doing next or when our next tour is. It's a great way for all the fans to be able to find out what's going on with us.
It's direct to the fans, too. It's what Potluck has to say to the fans, and they can come to our MySpace page, and I mean, we got a team of people that work on it, but it really is me and Underrated on there. People want to ask us questions about songs and why we made them and different things like that. They can really get a hold of us there. I mean, obviously the MySpace is such a big deal now, it's impossible to tackle all by yourself. But I mean, as far as direct interaction with the fans, it really is us. You know, we're not one of those groups who pays a kid to get on there and pretend like they're us and respond to fans and say whatever. You know, it really is us. It's a good way to get a hold of the fans and the fans to get a hold of us.
Let's talk about the tracks Potluck has out right now. You guys are really celebrating marijuana in a way, you know, like the Cottonmouth Kings, in a way that is really in your face, no holds barred.
Yeah, I mean, we. Like I was discussing earlier, man, hip hop is, you know, against the system, just in the tone of the lyrics and in the beats that are put down, and in the nature of creating hip hop music, we're like the outcast form of music. I mean, so whatever there's stuff that you really believe in, like, you know, you take a person like myself who grew up in San Diego, who didn't grow up in the best neighborhood under the best circumstances, and then I come out here to Humboldt, and I get to see, you know, different people out here and the way that marijuana has affected a whole community and the way it's affected just their personalities and the way that people interact with other people. And there can be a different way of living, a different thought process behind what's going on in the world. Like, there doesn't have to be all this aggression and all this fighting and all that stuff all the time, but there can be another way to live. And I think by me and Underrated going through those experiences that we went through, it's only natural for us to talk about that in our music and hope that we can affect change, because, you know, we've been affected, and that's our return gift to the world for affecting us.
Right on. So, you know, let me ask, what the next project for Potluck is? What are you guys working on right now?
Right now we're working on what I like to call the biggest marijuana album that's ever going to hit the streets. It's called The Cannabis Cartel. It's going to be Cottonmouth Kings, Cypress Hill, and Potluck. And we're just going to put together like a whole album just about kind of the marijuana and our whole different interaction with it and our different thoughts on it. And then combine like some of the biggest groups out there doing it and put together a CD and go out there and make it happen. So that's our plans. That CD should come out later on this year, right after the Cottonmouth Kings Cloud 9 comes out and the Big B More to Hate album comes out. You're going to catch that Cannabis Cartel record in shelves later on this year, and always catch us out on tour, man. That's our plan.
Wow, that is huge. How'd you get connected with Cypress Hill?
A lot of people don't know, but Sid Dog from Cypress Hill just signed a solo deal with Suburban Noise.
Wow.
So Sid Dog is going to be releasing his solo record with Suburban Noise. And obviously Cottonmouth Kings have been working with Cypress Hill for a while. They got a couple songs with Cypress Hill. So, I mean, it was just, you know, you have all those creative minds in there. And then, you know, you got the mad scientist and Brad X, you know, he's just the mastermind behind the whole Suburban Noise movement. And then, you know, you put all those artists together, it's just going to be a matter of time before Brad figures out how to get them all together and get the music out there.
And Suburban Noise Records, just an incredible catalog right now. Great group of artists and administrators. Looks like a lot of good things coming out in the future up there, too, as you mentioned. Must feel good for you guys in Potluck to be on that label.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for them to let us make our album is literally like a big step. A lot of people think, oh, that should be obvious. Any record label would just let you make your album. But if you think about it, man, a record label is the one putting up all that money behind your record. So a lot of times they want to have a say in what you're going to put out, because they've seen it happen, you know, a million times before. They've signed a whole bunch of artists. They've done a lot of things. But the cool thing with Suburban Noise is they'll sit back and let you make your record. You know, in the end, there's a that's all you can really ask for to get your message out there, is to have someone who's really going to sign you as an artist and support what you want to do. They don't have to agree with everything, but at the same time, they'll support you because they know you believe in it. And that's something you can't buy with any money. That's something that you can't trade for, you know, any favor. That's just something that just makes you feel good as an artist to know you have your label behind you like that.
Right on, guys. One Ton, Underrated from Potluck. We have links to their website, to their MySpace page, to their CDs up on iTunes. Thanks for joining us here on the Audio Stash today, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Right on. The group Potluck here on the Audio Stash today. We're giving away 5 of their CDs. In order to win them, you got to send us an email. Just visit normalaudiostash.com right now. You can find out how to win. We got 5 CDs and 1 t-shirt to give away. Everyone who wins a CD gets a Normal Freedom card as well. So make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. You got to have your entry in to win by Sunday night. That's how long you can have it. Right now it's Friday, July the 6th. It's got to be in by Sunday, July the 8th. That's what you can do to get your Potluck CD. Go up to normalaudiostash.com right now.
This weed game, man,
it's the game for me.
Makes a lot of paper.
Sure do.
And I'm trying to be a rich man.
Real top.
He'll get you a little bit of loot.
I like him.
You want to be a rich man?
Yeah.
You smoke it every day and you smoke it every night. You smoke it in the joint, blunt, bong, or in a pipe. Puff, puff, and pass, all you gotta do is ask. Marijuana 101, the only class that I can pass.
I'm about to grow the most beautifulest thing you ever seen. I got indoor, outdoor, I got pinkish purple weed. They can't stop me, I buy supplies and stay away from coppers. A ganja farmer looking in the sky, I'm seeing helicopters. And jealous talkers telling get no love where I'm from. You shut your mouth, don't tell nobody unless you want the feds to come. So I shut up, stay low pro, and stick to what I know. Set the timers, hang the lights, and watch this marijuana grow. pH the tubs, I'm making sure the fans are spinning right. Put row rocks in the buckets, then I move the plants right in the light. Look for mites, check for seeds, hope they don't hermaphrodite. Appreciation for the weed, been growing more than half my life. Harvest time, money sign, time to let them dry. Flush them clean, trimming back the weed, I love my 215. Pounds for 3, I got hundreds and that means hella G's. Fuck selling CDs, I gotta call my dude to CDs.
This one time,
hey, I got the purple.
Is it really purple this time?
Yep, it is.
Let's get rich.
I've been holding on to pounds, taking calls from out of town. Silly ringing like a bell, cause the word done got around. But it's purple, frosty, smell like asshole crack. But about my sack, the size of baseball bats. You feel it in your chest, it's better than the best. My shit, it sells itself, I make more cheddar than the rest. Won't ever do you dirty, 80 grand will get you 30. My niggas down south say, but it's so purdy. Never will it stop, Humboldt County got it locked. Started sleeping more at night, stop serving off the block. I'm working every day, no boss, no day off. This job don't got no benefits to help with smokers cough. I'm blinding like a skater, I'm serving like a waiter. I'm running like LaDainian, we're chasing down this paper. Gotta have it my way, catch me on the highway. The permanent situation if you're smoky on a Friday.
You smoke it every day and you smoke it every night. You smoke it in the joint, blunt, bong, or in a pipe. Puff, puff, and pass, all you gotta do is ask. Marijuana 101, the only class that I can pass.
Green thumb grower,
big pound holder, block street soldier.
Everybody want a little bit of weed and not much. Green thumb grower,
big pound holder, block street soldier.
Everybody want a little bit of buzz.
What's up with it, man? What the business is? You trying to be a rich man? Oh yeah, man, I'm caked up. You know, I'm waiting for a flock of chickens right now. You know, I'm trying to make that next move. I'm in the streets, you know, I go get it.
Just received a package from the homeland. Whoa,
man.
89 big boys to break them down to little bros. Before I hit the dope, I roll 5. I'm a humble boy, it's in my nature to stay high. What's the price? $3.50 in the streets. But since I got the red plug, I let it go a little cheap. $3.25, yeah, that's it. Even cheaper by the foes, I call them get rich starter kits. So holla at your boy, I'm hollering, holla at your boy. 45 in the waistline, backpack full of joy. From Sac to Oakland, Richmond and back. Fairfield to Leo, Stockton, back to Sac. I don't discriminate, man, I'm in all hoods. 4XT across the front say it's all good. And it's all good, 2 for 15s, a 4 for 30s. I'm slinging purple and good greens. And good schemes keep me on top of sales. Not suffering from the mumps, but I'm suffering from pocket swells. One eye, yeah, that one guy is now what they hollering when I'm riding by.
You smoke it every day and you smoke it every night. You smoke it in the joint, blunt, bong, or in a pipe. Puff, puff, and pass, all you gotta do is ask. Marijuana 101, the only class that I can pass.
Green thumb grower,
big pound holder, block street soldier.
Everybody want a little bit of weed and not much.
Green thumb grower,
big pound holder, block street soldier.
Everybody want a little bit of bud.
This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. If you listen to the Audio Stash, vote for us at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. Everyone have a fun summer weekend out there, and we're back at 4:20 on Monday.